All right, now I'm kind of out of control on this collective wisdom and crowdsourced knowledge idea. The Gutenberg Project we were talking about makes publicly available books in what's called the public domain in the digital world. Public domain, of course, is outside of copyright restrictions. But what is public domain in a world where one's life can be uploaded, where a blog can become a book published from a smartphone in the click of a single command? The Digital Public Library of America goes online later this week. There's a milestone. And its mission is to enlarge the digital public domain, making all the collections of all libraries accessible to everyone, everywhere, with an internet connection. Here to talk about the collective wisdom of the world's libraries is the Digital Public Library's Director for Content, Emily Gore. Welcome to the program, Emily.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So are all books eligible because they're in libraries to be in this online archive? Is that different from, say, Google Books, which is more of a commercial venture?
So no, at this point, we are starting with materials in the public domain, or material that is what we're calling green-lighted content. And that's content held by our libraries, archives, and museums that we have the appropriate rights to put online. That can include materials like manuscripts, artworks, photographs, streaming video, streaming audio. So the Digital Public Library of America is not just about books. While there are many public domain books as part of the initial launch of the DPLA, it does include other kinds of materials we hold in our libraries, archives, and museums.
And what was the real enabler here? I remember when the New York Public Library went online and you could see all of its text. That was a huge revelation. It was so exciting, but it's a long time ago that happened. Is it bandwidth that really enables this to be something more than just a text file?
Well, I mean, bandwidth is helpful. I think part of the goal here is not to have all of these pockets of content be siloed. So the goal is to use the technology that we do have, including, you know, better bandwidth, to pull things together in one discoverable place so that these small historical societies and other small institutions that contribute to these aggregation points in their state can then be shared at a larger scale, so that some small historical society, let's say in small town Minnesota, is now in the Digital Public Library of America, and where their content was not discoverable before or was discoverable by only people who potentially knew they existed, now it can be discovered by the world.
So this is a balance between finding titles and examples of literature and books that everyone should have access to all over the world, and also opening access to specialized places that no one would otherwise see but for this access.
That's exactly right. One of the advantages, we're working as a, we have a couple of models. We have service hubs, which are state-based hubs, which in all of the libraries, archives, and museums in that state have the opportunity to participate. And right now, we're working with 6 pilot states, but anyone in those states, any small library, archive, and museum, can contribute their content through this aggregation point, which then feeds the data up to the DPLA. So we're getting data that otherwise people would not be able to find, honestly, because it is fairly obscured, siloed content.
Can you give me one example of a treasure before we go that I'd never see anywhere else?
Yes. So daguerreotypes of Abraham Lincoln, George Washington. And let me give you one more. The video footage of the Freedom Riders from the Civil Rights Movement from the Digital Library of Georgia.
Nice. Nice. The Digital Public Library of America goes online later this week. Emily Gore is the Digital Public Library's Director for Public Content. How's that for collective wisdom? Thanks, Emily.
Thank you.